The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of Walnut Media USA, its staff, management, or advertisers. Now, The Journey with Van Deeb.
Welcome to The Journey with me as your host, Van Deeb. You know, our mission is to inspire and motivate and encourage you to live your best life. So the guests I have on this show have experiences and stories that we can all benefit from. And remember, you can share all these episodes by going to kcro.com. And don't hesitate to reach out to me if you'd like info on a past guest or any comments you'd like to make. And you can do that by emailing me at van@vandeeb.com. Well, I'm pretty fired up today. I'm going to call her a celebrity. Because she is, but we have somebody very special in the studio today, Leah Baez. She's an author. She's a keynote speaker. She gives her time to Douglas County, working closely with first responders. I just think she's doing everything. With that, I'm going to say, I could tell them about you, but it'd take up half the show, Leah, so I'm not going to do that, but welcome to The Journey.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited, too, especially we got some fun things to talk about and on your journey, but before we get started, my audience likes to know a little bit about where you're from. Are you from Omaha? Did you move here? Lay it on us.
Yes, I am a proud South Omaha born and raised girl, and I still live in South Omaha.
Right on.
Love it so much. So
right on. Yep. Yeah, South Omaha is great. So did you go to South High?
I went to South High actually for 1 year, my freshman year, but then I actually transferred to Bellevue West High School because I played volleyball and was recruited to that team. I know that's kind of bad to be a traitor, but you know.
No, you got to go where they want you.
You got to go where the opportunity was. And I was able to compete at state 3 years that I was there. So that was an exciting time of life for sure. Definitely different. Sports have changed so much for youth over the years, but I was honored to be a part of that program and learn so much. And yeah, I loved it.
I think sports is awesome for discipline. You know, I was an athlete. I say that loosely, but I played football in college, and I wasn't a great college athlete. But the discipline, I thrived on that, and I think that probably played a big role in your career. Knowing what discipline is, that you work hard for something.
Yes, absolutely.
And that could be being a band member or being a part of DECA or ROTC. The fact is that you're going in every day and you're working towards something.
Yes.
And but volleyball, man, we're in such a volleyball. People know we're broadcasting live from Omaha, Nebraska.
The volleyball capital of the world.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is. And I've never really paid attention to it. I thought it was, you know, a great sport, but I've never paid attention. I started paying attention and watching it on TV. And then I went to a couple of Omaha has the Supernovas. I've been to two of those games, and I mean, it's electric.
It's so electric.
Yeah, and I want to go back. I mean, it was so much fun. I actually caught a ball. I sat on the floor the last game I went to, and I like to talk to people around me, but you can't do that when you're on the floor. You got to watch every, because that ball can come at you going, I don't know how many miles an hour, but you could get injured. I mean,
yeah, I love to see so much passion and support around women's sports. Yeah. I mean, it's just so incredible
and it's
to
just
see
growing.
The growth of it, to see how now, you know, and I coached volleyball too. So like seeing these girls start when they're in like kindergarten and first grade, it's incredible. I mean, you know,
that's how it starts.
And I think, you know, more girls want to play sport, and that's exciting, too. So I think it's really elevated, you know, a lot of positive opportunities for girls.
I think so, too. And I think women, not just in sports, but I was just telling somebody recently, you know, this is my 44th year in real estate, and the demographics recently changed where now it used to be the number one home buyers was a couple. Now it's the number one home buyer is single women.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm included in that demographic.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think that, and I think we embrace that in the state of Nebraska.
Yeah, absolutely. Women empowerment, all about it.
Did you ever think about trying to play volleyball in college?
Yeah, actually I did. I had an opportunity to play at a junior college. I was kind of being recruited by the coach there, and it was actually at Iowa Western Community College.
Great school.
And I went there for some workouts, but then I also got a full ride academically to the University of Nebraska at Omaha. So it was, I got the actually the Buffett Scholarship.
Oh, wow.
So I was.
Congratulations.
I was actually, had an opportunity to go to any Nebraska college and have 5 years of college completely paid for. Wow. So I said, do I want to go to a junior college and have to pay out of pocket to play volleyball, or do I take this full ride opportunity? And for me, it was really about alleviating that pressure from my parents to have to pay for my, you know, my my college. Yeah. So I really was thinking of it as like, I want to do this favor to my parents. I'm going to take care of this myself. And I'm going to go this 4 year route. And I ended up just playing intramural volleyball at UNO.
Fun.
And we had so much fun doing it. So I do sometimes think like, what if I would have went? But I will say, you know what? The NIL deals weren't there back then. No. So, oh, well.
Yeah, right on.
Now, if there were NIL deals back then maybe I would have pushed
a
little harder.
That'd be a different story.
Right.
You know, that's really honoring your parents.
Yes.
Because it's expensive. I mean, it sets people back.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee, you know, if you're playing sports, there's no guarantee that you're going to, you know, play more than the first season.
So exactly. Yeah.
I think you made a really smart move, and we're just grateful that you didn't leave.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep good, talented people like you in the area, in the city.
Yeah. When I was in college, I did some internships. I was a reporter at the Denver Post newspaper. I worked at the Indianapolis Star newspaper. So I left and experienced other cities. But, you know, I have a huge family here in Omaha. And, it's, you know, we're very close-knit family. So it was hard for me to leave and stay gone very long. So I'm proud to say I'll probably be here for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's great because Omaha and surrounding areas are a great community to live in. You know, I did the same thing. I went away straight from college. And I think, and then I came back, and I think you learn a lot by being on your own, not being, you know, a phone call or a 10-minute drive away from your parents' house. Or I think it's good for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's very important. So did you know at a young age what you wanted to pursue as an adult? Did you have any inclination, I want to be this?
I would say a little bit. So my mom has always said that I've always been a storyteller. When she was working as a waitress in a Mexican restaurant, I made up this huge story that Casey the gorilla got loose at the Omaha Henry Dorley Zoo. And like, I apparently told it with so much like, you know, belief that everybody was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. And it was obviously, I was a toddler, you know, I was a young elementary kid and, you know, that completely made this up. But she always joked that I was always a storyteller. Well, in high school, I didn't make the yearbook staff. I had applied and I didn't get selected. And I was really hurt by that. And I remember going up to the teacher afterward and like looking at the lists of who made yearbook staff and not. And she said, I didn't put you on the yearbook staff because you're a fantastic writer. I want you to be on the newspaper staff.
Oh.
And so that door closing for me actually led me to opportunity and was actually my introduction to journalism. And that's when I was like, I love this. I love getting to meet people, go up to strangers, ask questions, write a story, and turn it into something that's actually, you know, cool to read, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was really my first introduction to journalism. And I was like, I want to do this. So once I was done with high school, I immediately went into journalism major at UNO. So
they have a great journalism department.
Yes, it was great journalism department. I worked at the Gateway newspaper, which is a student newspaper.
I remember that very well. Yep.
Yep, and I worked there all 4.5 years of my college career. Probably the best experiences I've had were happening on deadline in that newsroom. late at night when we're trying to put this paper out. But, you know, that was that no for me when I wasn't selected for something. And that pivot actually led me to this career. So sometimes those no's we get are actually going to lead us to better things.
Yes, I totally agree with it. If you'll allow it to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you'll allow it to. So back then, you didn't have the technology that they have today for putting a newspaper together.
The
Gateway. And I remember seeing the Gateway all around UNO when I went there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we had to lay out the newspaper, literally like putting stories where they should go. And we did have some of that was digital, but not like it is now. I mean, you know, it's so many advanced tools out there now that you can get that done a lot faster. But it was a labor of love for us.
Yeah, it had to be. So it's changing today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, journalism is changing. I just got to ask you this a question. I know we didn't talk about earlier, but how do we decipher today what is real and what's not real when it comes to social media and journalism?
That's such a good question.
I mean, I read stuff and I'm like, it can't be. This can't be accurate. And most of it is politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one side is making the other side look bad by posting, you know, or vice versa.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, with AI and all this technology that's changing, I mean, we just saw a story last night on the local news that talked about how, you know, weather agencies are concerned about AI creating like,
I just saw a piece of that. Yeah.
Fake tornadoes and images. And they're trying to decipher like what's real, what's not. So one of the things that we tell people, you got to have trusted news sources. Know who your local news sources are that you can rely on for breaking news, because that's where you're going to get the most credible information. So your KETVs, your WWTs in Omaha. That's where you're going to get, you know, breaking news fast. Mm-hmm. The national news is going to be a little bit different just because it's, you know, there's a lot of people that say some of them sway one side or the other when it comes to politics. So what I say is you got to try to find unbiased sources that are going to provide you with the information that you're looking for. So whenever you see something on social media, do not trust it immediately when you see
it. I'm with you.
You always have to like double check and triple check the source of the information.
Yeah.
And then I always, you know, you could always do like there's another like fact checker tool out there that you can double check like what's actually real and what's not.
Yeah.
Because I think there's so many times where people have said like the celebrity passes away and there's, you know, so many things.
Coaches at Nebraska.
And you know, a lot of times we're asking ourselves like what is real anymore with AI. We live in a filtered world. Yeah. We have like so many opportunities to change the way we look just on a app on your phone.
Right.
You know, so it's, there's just a lot of stuff out there right now. You just got to double check and triple check the sources of information.
You know, one of the great things about living in Omaha, Nebraska is we're so grounded and we're so authentic. So I think that we escape a lot of the major markets that where there may be more phony, you know, a lot more of that. I think that here, you know, everybody's so approachable. You know, you can go up to these people and ask, is this real or is this not real?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but you mentioned, you know, like listening to the local, the experts and getting your information from the local experts versus getting it on AI. Hey, I want my audience to know how to stay in touch with you, reach out to you. We're going to talk about some of your keynote speaking. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
My website is leahbaez.com, and that's LEIABAEZ.com.
Beautiful, beautiful. So growing up, was there anybody that inspired you? Was there, you know, like somebody you'd consider a mentor, maybe somebody you knew, maybe somebody you didn't know?
Yeah, absolutely. So my mentor when I was young, her name is Cindy Gonzalez, and you probably know who she is. She's a reporter now at the Nebraska Examiner.
Okay.
She used to be a reporter for many, many years at the Omaha World Herald.
Yeah.
and she's my cousin.
Oh, right on. So, what a great mentor to have.
Yeah. So when I first...
We'll give a shout out to Cindy.
Yes, Cindy. I hope you're listening. I'll make sure you hear this. But when I first knew that journalism was going to be the path I was taking, that's when I said... She was working at the World Herald at the time. I said, can I come shadow you?
Yeah.
And so I went and did a job shadow with her and absolutely loved it. And I thought it was so cool. Just like, you know, all these reporters around all the police scanners and there, everybody had something going on. And there was just a lot of cool stuff happening in there. And I was like, I want to be in this newsroom. I want to be, you know, doing this work. Because I just thought it was so cool that, you know, we had the, you know, role of getting information and getting it out to the public mm-hmm. quickly and mm-hmm. accurately. And to me, that was so intriguing.
What pressure, man alive.
Yes.
We're going to talk a lot more about that. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Journey. I'm Van Deeb, your host, and my special guest is Leah Baez. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And we're back on The Journey. I'm Van Deeb, your host, and I'm so excited today. I've got a wonderful person, Leah Baez, with us today. And I want to ask you, so your career in journalism, I'm fascinated by it because I know it's a right now business. I mean, if it's 2 days later, it's old news. And I know that comes with a lot of pressure. I thought my career of being in real estate might be pressure, but tell us about your career as a journalist for the Omaha World Herald.
Yeah, so I...
And what years would that have been?
Yeah, so when I first started working at the World Herald, I worked... I kind of got my foot in the door as a part-time college student. I was actually working part-time in sports, but I was in college. So I was taking the sports scores at night when the football games were over. They'd call into the newsroom, and I would take...
You were there late.
Yeah, I would take the calls at night and plug in the scores so they had the scores in the morning in the paper, and that's kind of how I got my start. And then they, you know, started to give me a little bit more responsibilities. I wrote a few sports stories, covered Creighton women's rowing team.
Oh, wow.
Did some really cool stuff, and... then I graduated from college, and they happened to have a business opening in the business department. And so I applied for that, and I got it. And so that I started as a business reporter working at the Omaha World Herald, and that would have been in 2006.
Yeah.
So that was...
Was the paper starting to change then, or hadn't it started changing yet? Where, and I say change in reference to the digital world started happening, and you saw more and more online newspapers.
So we definitely had an online presence, but I would say it was just kind of beginning. You know, it was it didn't really explode until years later, but definitely we had Omaha.com, yeah. And that was still, you know, a big part of our role as journalists is getting it online. So that whole concept of online news brought this additional kind of responsibility for reporters, because not only did you have to get your story in for a deadline, you then also had to get like an online version ready so that we could have the news right away, because now we're not just competing with local media for, you know, to beat their news cycle and their TV news, but everybody's putting everything online. So who has it online first, you know? Yeah. So it just added this additional layer of responsibility for journalists as technology continued to evolve. But I eventually became an online editor. So I ran livewellnebraska.com, which was our health and fitness site.
Very familiar.
Yep. And then I also did, I was an online editor for omaha.com. So mm-hmm. one of my
favorite. Those are big positions.
Huge positions, yeah. Huge responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I just really enjoyed the fast pace of things and working. I always tell people I work better on deadline, under pressure.
Wow.
My mom's like, why do you procrastinate everything you do? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm still in my deadline mindset, you know, working as a journalist for so many years. Because I worked for the World Herald for, I mean, in total, like, you know, almost more than 15 years. So
it's
a long time. I loved that career. And I honestly probably would have stayed there. But, you know, unfortunately, the writing was on the wall with how things were changing.
Sure.
You know, positions were being cut. The paper was getting thinner. just started to change everything with online, you know, and even social media and how people got their news was making it difficult for newsrooms because we had to have everything behind a paywall, right? Because how else are we going to make money? And advertisers were moving online instead of, you know, in the paper. So there's just all these dynamics were changing so much. And so I eventually left, but it was a very hard decision for me. You know, it's like I always tell people, you know, newspaper journalism is like my first love. You know, that's I knew I wanted to do that for since high school, like I mentioned. And it's unfortunate to see what's happening, but I'm grateful for the work that's still being done at the Omaha World Herald. And even though they have a small staff now, it's just, you know, it's such important, like, journalism and watchdog journalism to have people doing those types of stories.
I had a great rep that I talked to once a week placing real estate ads for years and years with the Omaha World Herald. And Deatra Craddock, I think her name was, she was awesome. Made things real easy on us.
But,
you know, that's how we communicate. That's how we got the housing out of what's for sale.
Yeah.
Was putting ads in the World Herald. There wasn't a lot of other opportunities and media.
Yeah. So you probably know then how that shift happened, right?
Big time.
People stopped really advertising.
Yep.
And I don't know if they went online or if digital or social media ads or what it was or Zillow or, you know, all these other things.
Right.
But you know, it just seemed like that was changing the dynamics of the newspaper industry.
Did you ever think about going into television and being a journalist?
I did.
Because I could see, because you've got a presence about you. I could see you being real successful doing
so
that.
So I actually thought about it, but I had a friend who was a mentor. She had mentioned, like, maybe you would do TV news. But honestly, I mean, at that point in my life, I was like, I want to make some money.
Yeah, because it's...
And you don't get into journalism for the money, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be up front. When I started as a journalist back then, I mean, I was, you know, making less than $40,000 a year.
Yep.
So, you know, I was just ready to make some real money and to be, you know, and I had these visions of myself doing other things. And I knew that journalism wasn't going to be forever, but I was like, I can still utilize my skills as somebody who, you know, speaks and interviews and, you know, is able to craft stories quickly and get the information out accurately in another job, you know?
I think your background has played a huge role in what you're doing today.
Yes,
I think it's
absolutely
probably been a real catalyst for you. And I want to echo what you said about financially. I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot of anchors and journalists on their housing for helping them find homes for all three major stations in Omaha, and mostly the anchors, but some of the journalists, you know, when you're helping them with their real estate needs, finding them a house or selling their house, you get to know people real well.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a lot of money with these reporters and journalists, but the thing is they had to be available 24/7 when stories broke, you know. But I think that Omaha's got some really great journalists, you know, and the World Herald, I hate seeing it getting smaller because I've always been a big fan of it.
But to your point, I will add, like, people don't get in journalism for the money.
No.
We get into it
for... It's like teaching.
Yes, we get into it for the passion of storytelling, helping other people share their stories.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some of the stories in the you know, content that we share is uplifting and inspiring that can change somebody else's life. And so I think that's also, you know, something that's so important because it is like public service, you know, because we're helping get the information out in a way that can, you know, give hope to our community.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you can identify who's passionate and who's not.
Oh, absolutely.
I happen to be really close friends with two anchors on Channel 7, a weatherman and the lead anchor. It's a husband and wife team. And they are, you know, when I hear them at dinners and we talk and the way they're passionate about getting the story out, making sure they're accurate, letting the world know, it's so refreshing. I love being around passionate people.
Mm-hmm.
I just do, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of people, I got this job and it's just okay and it pays the bills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love being around passionate people. Well, tell us about your position at Douglas County.
Yes.
There's a lot there.
A lot. So I am the communications director for Douglas County, which basically means I wear many hats, but...
you're using your background.
Using my background in journalism, yep. That has played a huge role in why I got hired for this job. But essentially, I act as the, public information officer during, severe weather events. I handle a lot of crisis communications. If they're, the local media want to come interview our county commissioners or get, write a story about one of our county departments.
You set that up.
Douglas County 911. Yes. Douglas County Corrections, for example. I help facilitate those interviews or get them the information they need. So still doing that media relations work and helping, tell the stories, but just in a new way, right? So I'm not necessarily the reporter, but I'm helping get the accurate information so that we can still get that information out to the public.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very important position. I mean, it's I'd call it a life and death. I mean,
it really is. If you think about the Arbor Day tornado in 2024, that we were working nonstop trying to get information out to the public, and I will tell you those first few hours were so scary and so critical because we were waiting to see if there were any injuries or any fatalities. And if I can think of a moment in my career where I was like goosebumps or like chills, just waiting for information, it was in that moment because we were just hoping and praying that there were no fatalities. And luckily, we had none. And that also, we have to credit that to, local media, the National Weather Service, everybody who helped prepare the residents in our community for that, because that was a devastating and probably one of the most devastating natural disasters in our area.
And Leah, was there any fatalities? I didn't think there was.
No, none.
Wow. That is something else. It's just... bringing me back to that day. I live at 180th and Dodge area, and I'm in my sunroom and with my dog, and we're both watching this go across Dodge Street. I don't know, way out by 200th.
Could you see it?
Well, we saw the black cloud moving. I didn't actually see the funnel, but I could see, and my dog and I are looking at each other like, should we go down the basement? And finally we said, yes, we should. But man, it was a blessing with the devastation, that did, and there were no fatalities. But what I was really impressed with, that one of the reasons why I love Omaha, and God's willing, I'll never leave, is people came together. Mm-hmm. That next day, my friends that own businesses, they're all volunteering to use their places a drop off for clothes, for necessities for these families. The way people came together was just so impressive, and it made me proud to live here.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to see all of the volunteers and the people coming together.
Yeah.
And that is right. You're right on when you're talking about our community. People are so willing to help each other, and that was an amazing thing to see. I will say on the flip side, though, when it comes to the areas of disaster, it's important for people not to immediately show up in those areas, because actually some people who showed up in those areas actually added
more stress
because it's hard for first responders and people to get everywhere. And there's a lot of people.
Does that
around.
Happen a lot?
That happened specifically for the Arbor Day tornado.
Oh boy.
There were even people, they had to eventually have the National Guard come in and act as security because we had so many people driving through the areas of devastation that with phones and, trying to get social media and TikTok and whatnot, just to be there to post and, post content. And, we couldn't have that. So we had to keep people out of that.
I'm sure you were around the clock during that time.
Yeah. So we're basically on call 24/7 when something like this happens. So, but, once we got past that initial few hours and we knew that there weren't any, fatalities and it was a breath of fresh air. And it was now okay, now what do we got to do next? How do we, and we're answering calls about debris. And now we're wondering about, can we take tree debris to the landfill for drop off? And so all of these other things come
into. You're coordinating a lot of that.
I'm helping get that information to the media.
To the right people.
So that they can publicize it to the
there
community.
You go.
Yep.
So there, there was some looting going on too. Mm-hmm. Do you play a role in making sure that there's law enforcement at these?
So Douglas County Sheriff's Office did a great job.
Yeah, they did.
Making sure that got shut down pretty quickly. You know, so they had a strong presence out there securing the area, and once they found out that was happening, they made sure. There were also, unfortunately, people like that were scamming homeowners who had lost their homes, at saying like, we'll help you rebuild.
Isn't that amazing?
We'll help you put on a new roof, all these things. And a lot of these companies weren't even legit. And so there's so many things to think about. But I mean, in a time of crisis, you would not think that people would stoop that low, but they do. And so as a homeowner, as a resident, you got to be diligent and you got to know, like we said before, like you got to be double checking, triple checking company names,
Isn't that amazing?
And don't make any decisions right away. Check with the other people.
Don't be in a rush.
Don't be in a rush.
I got to tell you, we're going to move on here, but I got to just to tell you, is I had a rental property about a mile away, just right down Maple Street around 200th Street, just real close, blocks away from the devastation. Decided I was going to sell it. This is like a month after the tornado. The lady that bought it was a single lady with three kids whose home was completely leveled in the storm.
Wow.
Completely. But here's the cool thing. It was the exact same floor plan, same builder, same floor plan. So her and her three kids, it was just like they never left their home. It was the exact same everything. And I thought that was super cool.
That is very cool.
And that made my heart full.
Yeah.
To know that, they didn't have to go to some strange floor plan or something like that. But so we're going to move on, but thank you for
Can I give one plug to our ReachWell app?
Give the plug.
Okay, so the ReachWell app is a new app, and you can get that in the Apple Store or on Google Play, depending on if you have iPhone.
ReachWell.
And the app is intended to allow you to receive any type of emergency alert. That could be weather-related. That could be an Amber Alert. That could be an alert from Omaha Fire or Omaha Police, but you get all of your alerts in one place. And the cool thing is if there's somebody who needs it translated, you can get it in more than 150 languages.
Love it.
So it's an opportunity. It's ReachWell. And it's available on the Apple Store and Google Play. And again, it's just so that we want residents to be aware of what's happening in our community.
Yep.
And
Thank you for doing that.
This is a great way to get emergency alerts on your phone, no matter where you're at.
Awesome. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We got some really cool stuff to talk about with Leah. She was on the Oprah Winfrey podcast, and I can't wait to talk about that. You're listening to The Journey. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back on The Journey. I'm your host, Van Deeb, and my special guest, Leah Baez. I'm so glad she's here. She's just a plethora of information, and there's so many things I want to ask you, and we don't have the time, so I got to have you come back on the show again.
I'd be happy to, anytime.
But until then, we've still got another segment left, and I want to just, we all have challenges in life, and I'm just so grateful that a lot of my guests over the years have opened up, because when they open up about their challenges, all they're doing is making people listening know that they're not alone, they're not on an island, that other people go through challenges that they do. And I love it when people do that. And you've agreed to tell us about maybe some of the challenges that you've had. And then after that, we're going to talk about Oprah Winfrey. But tell us a little
bit. My girl, Oprah.
Yeah, right on. Your new best friend.
my new
I'm
BFF.
Waiting. Tom and I are waiting for you to say, and you get a car, and you get
a
car.
Exactly.
We both want new cars.
Yes.
Anyway, tell us a little bit, Leah, about some of the challenges that have made you who you are today.
Yes. So I'm proud to say I am more than 6 years sober today.
Yeah, I'm going to do that because I think that's cool.
Yes.
Tom and I are clapping.
Thank you. But, that didn't come from like just one day waking up saying, you know, I'm going to be, you know, done drinking. I actually went through some really, really hard times and challenges. I went through a really bad divorce, custody battle, really just some eye-opening moments of my life that pushed me to realize that I had a problem with drinking. And it started when I was younger. You know, I was a party animal, and I loved being a party animal. Yeah. It was part of my identity. Fun. And in college, there's a drinking special every day. Monday, Monday had a special. Tuesday had a special. Wednesday,
Sunday, fun day.
Sunday, fun day. Thursday, you know, Tuesdays was tequila Tuesdays or something. Right. But, you know, every single day was drinking for me in college. And then it just progressively got worse because what I was doing was I was coping when I, you know, started to get some life challenges or, you know, stress. You know, my marriage wasn't working. Things were happening in my life. And then I would drink because that was my escape. That was how I coped my whole adult life. And so I got to a point, though, that I really had to question what decisions I was making because now I had to face a judge to prove that I was worthy to be a mother in court. And that was eye-opening for me because all I wanted to do was be a mom.
Yeah.
And for a judge to tell me that I'm not worthy to be a mother because of my decisions and the choices that I've made was like the lowest. I mean, I've never felt lower.
Because you knew that that's not you.
That's not me. Yeah. And I knew I had a problem, but alcohol is everywhere.
Yeah, it's pushed on you. It's pushed on you.
And it's, you know, it's the only drug people will say, why aren't you doing it?
Yeah.
Nobody asks you that for the hard drugs, right? But with alcohol, if you tell somebody you're not drinking, people say, well, why?
Yeah.
Well, because I'm a maniac when
I drink. But today it's more acceptable.
Yes. And, I mean, and more people
should leave people. Yeah.
Yeah, more people are abstaining from alcohol. Younger people are not drinking like they used to.
No. It's becoming kind of cool not to drink.
It is becoming very cool to be sober, yes.
I can relate to you. I'm a non-drinker. And, you know, I grew up the ringleader of the party animals.
Mm.
But mine is, you know, it wasn't every day, but I'd plan out on a Monday. Friday, I'm going to get ripped. And then I hated myself on Saturday. I'm like, you know, God gave me these wonderful days to live. I don't want to have one day where I feel like crap. And it was not popular with my friends. They were like, oh, come on, Deeb, have a drink, you big wussy, you know, all. And they don't do that anymore, but back in the day they did. And it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me at all. But now nobody says a word. They just do their thing. I actually have people say to me at cocktail parties, you know, I never see you with a drink, but you're always laughing and having a great time. How do you do it?
Yeah.
And people will pour their souls to me and say, I can't quit and I can't socialize unless I have a buzz on.
Yeah.
And I just tell everybody, you know, switch to edibles. It's a lot more fun.
I tell people
I'm kidding.
I'm just as crazy and fun and loud without the alcohol. So I don't need the alcohol.
No, because you love life.
Yes.
And you know, I think I happen to be a person that, When I had heard that you don't drink and you're encouraging other people to live a better life, and you may not know, Leah, you may not know how many people you're inspiring. Hopefully you bring it up during your keynote speeches.
Always.
Because it makes people think, wow, you know, Leah's cool.
Yeah.
I can be cool like that too. And
I don't really push it on anybody.
Yeah.
You know, what I allow myself to do is I just allow people to see how good my life has got.
Yeah.
And lead by example in that they can just see what's happened in my life.
Lead by example.
They are watching my life and not only my life expand, but these opportunities land in my lap that would have not been aligned with me had I been that party animal drinking. Yeah. You know, my happy hours turned into after hours and I was like nonstop. I even dabbled in drugs here and there.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't who I wanted to be. And I knew that God had a way bigger plan for me, but it was realizing who I am and also like that I could have support around me when I'm sober. And that was the most beautiful thing is that once I told people that especially like my family, that, you know, I'm going to live sober. And, you know, not only do they support me, but I even have people in my family who have stopped drinking too. And yeah, I didn't tell them to, but I think that they watched my life expand and these opportunities happen. And, you know, just, you're just living fulfilled, yeah, you know?
And I tell you, the other thing we haven't brought up is you save a crap load of money. I mean, ridiculous amount.
I have money now.
Yeah. I mean, I was just with one of my coworkers and I met for a happy hour, and I always order Pellegrino or something like that. His glass of wine, he had one wine during this little meeting we had, $24. And I'm like, dude, you know, you could have got a great meal for that.
Yeah.
But I don't push it on. But I think that's cool because I'm just telling you, I know that you've influenced a lot of people with your decisions.
Yeah. You know, in full transparency, I will tell you, because you brought up the money part.
Yeah.
When I was younger and I was in college and I was actually starting out in my career, I would even just like hate looking at my checking account.
Yep.
I wouldn't even look at it for weeks because I was embarrassed how much I would spend or like how much money I didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't want to look at that because I don't want to like remind myself and get anxiety about all the money that I spent boozing.
Yeah.
And really, I don't even have money to pay my bills.
Yeah. What a great, great thinker you are as far, you know, you just made some great decisions that it benefits everybody around you, not just you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you gave a commencement speech that reached 6.5 million people. Tell us about
crazy. So I graduated with my master's degree in public administration from Bellevue University in 2018. And one of the cool things about, you know, graduation was they select a commencement speaker, but it's through a speech contest.
Mm.
And so several students had to apply, and we spoke in front of the faculty and the professors at Bellevue University. And I knew as a journalist that I couldn't get up there and just give some like rah-rah speech.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be real and authentic. And I knew that if I hooked them with the story, you know, just of overcoming and believing in yourself, that would really be, you know, the message that these graduates need to hear. So I wasn't afraid to show my messy side in this speech. And I went up there and I was like, you know, I feel like a failure as a wife and as a mother. And I talked about my hard stuff. And they selected me as the speaker.
Wow.
So the day comes, and this is the first time that I've ever shared my story publicly. And I'm thinking, okay, there's a few hundred people in the audience. I was like, I can handle that, you know?
Yeah.
So I get up on stage and I take a deep breath. And I remember being so nervous and I just like let it all out, because this is I was a journalist telling other people's stories.
Right.
Never
now you're telling your own.
Never did I tell my own.
Wow.
And so I was just like, this was probably the hardest thing that I've ever done. But I went for it and I gave this speech, and I just felt so free afterward because I did. I was myself and I was honest about who I was. I didn't get up there and say like, look at me, I'm this success. Instead, I said, I'm failing and I'm struggling. And here's what we can learn from this. We keep going. We have a support system around us. We believe in ourselves. And then great things can happen.
Yeah.
And that was my message. And I remember getting off stage and a woman who was a fellow graduate leaned into me and she said, I wasn't going to come to graduation today because I'm also going through a custody battle. She's like, I needed this message.
Yeah.
And it was in that moment, that one person, that I knew that my story had purpose. And I said, wow, this is actually what I need to be doing. You know, yeah. I need to be sharing.
That was your moment.
That was my moment. Yeah. That was like,
God gave you this gift to reach others.
Yes. And so I said, okay, well, I feel good now. I don't feel so embarrassed anymore. Yeah. I don't have this shame anymore. And then Bellevue University posted it online on YouTube. And it goes viral.
Oh my gosh.
6.5 million people.
Wow.
I was worried about a few hundred people in the audience.
Yeah.
Now I got millions of people knowing that I messed up, but it was absolutely so like.
Have you got speaking gigs off people watching that?
That's how my speaking career got launched.
Wow.
So I wasn't even a public speaker until that went viral. And then I had all these organizations saying, come speak, come speak, yeah, come speak. And of course I'm like, yes, yes, yes. But I was speaking for free. I didn't know that you could have a speaker business,
yeah,
and actually charge people to be a keynote speaker. And so I spoke for free for years.
Yeah.
And then I had one woman I'll never forget. And she said, send me your speaker fee. And I remember saying, what's that? So I Google, what's the speaker fee?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wow, I could be charging for this. And I haven't been charging, you know, for years.
Yeah.
And so then I looked into getting a speaker coach and I learned how to create a business out of it. And it's just exploded. But I really feel like this is what God wants me to do you know.
You've got a message.
Inspire and hope. And
people like to listen to people that have been there and done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's very valuable. I've had that in my career. When I started one of the largest real estate firms in the Midwest, real estate firms want to know, you know, you started this out of your basement. How'd you do it? I am attracted to people like you that have been there and done that. That didn't just, so many people today have come up to me, I want to be a speaker like you. What do I do? And I'm like, go do something. Go do something monumental in your life so people will want to hear you. But so many people today, it's amazing they want to be speakers, which is good. I mean, you can be anything you want to be. But I like listening to people like you that have been there and done that because you're more impactful. You've had the life lessons and you've got something to say that is through experience. And that will empower people, that will motivate people, that will inspire people.
And I'll add to that, like for those people who do want to be keynote speakers, you know, you got to be willing to talk about the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, people resonate with real stories and that's how we connect. In a world of AI and all this filters and all these, you know, changes.
Not intimate.
People want real.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that more and more, that's what people connect most with. And so when you can be, you know, real about your life experiences or the challenges that you faced and you can share that, people are going to connect.
Golden.
And people are going to want more from you.
Yeah. Golden. Tell us about Oprah Winfrey. I'm saving the best for towards the last because I'm a big fan of hers.
Oh, me too.
I've always been a big fan of hers because she talks about the hard stuff.
She talks about the hard stuff. Yeah. I've as a journalist.
And her career was not easy.
Yes.
You know, at all.
As a journalist, you know, as a woman of color, I've looked up to her my whole life. You know, I've watched her and my mom was a huge fan. We watched her every day. And it was just an honor to, you know, be in her presence, even if it was virtual. We were virtual.
Right on.
But it was like, she says my name. Like, she knows who I am, sort of, you know. Yeah. But it was this thing.
My good friend, Leah Baez in Omaha.
Yes. And the whole experience, though, I think was a very God thing. Because I've had Oprah on my vision board for 10 years plus, you know, she's been on there. Because I wanted to be in her audience when she gives away all the free stuff, like you mentioned. You get a car. That's what I dreamed of. Like, I want to be in that audience someday. So I had Harpo Productions on my vision board for dozens of years. Well, the crazy thing about this whole story is one day I get an email from Harpo Productions. And it says, we want you to be a guest on the Oprah podcast. And of course, I thought it was a scam because I'm like, why would they want me?
Did you apply for that?
No.
They just found you.
They just emailed me. So after I talked to the producer, I found out, you know, it was real. And I was in Oprah's database because during COVID, I had signed up to be an Oprah insider, which was like her masterclass. And like, there's a lot of learning opportunities from her. So I signed up for that. So they knew everything about me because I had to fill out a profile. They knew my name, what I do. I was an author. I was a speaker. They had all those details. I was a mom, you know. They knew all that. And so they were reaching out to people to be potential guests. And I was one of them.
Wow.
What are the chances of that? Now, here's what I have to say about that.
But you manifested that.
I manifested that.
Yeah, I totally believe in that, by the way.
But also, I believe that, like, it was like the reward for doing the work and, you know, being comfortable in my skin with the failures and the challenges. Because the reason I was on there was to talk about being a mother of a teenage daughter in the digital and social media era. And how challenging that is for us as parents.
What a great topic.
Right? And so if I wasn't comfortable talking about my personal life or like who I am, that would have never been aligned with me. You know, I would have never been that person to say, yes, I want to be a guest. But I had this great opportunity to do it. And so we did it. So both my daughter and I, we interviewed with Oprah. And it was an incredible experience. And my daughter, she is committed to stay off social media.
And what's her name?
Her name is Estella.
Estella, we're giving you a shout out. Yes. You got a great mom, Estella.
She has vowed to stay off social media until she's 16 because she knows the dangers. And she promised Oprah. She didn't promise mom, so she has to. So she has to stick to it.
I love to hear that. Leah Baez, I'm so grateful you chose to be on our show today, that you accepted our invite. And I really want my audience to get to know you. So please, it's her website is LeiahBaez.com. And look her up if you need a keynote speaker or a local or national. She'll do such a great job. And you just got to, I mean, you would be a great person to listen to, because I've enjoyed this hour I've got to spend with you just, you know, here. So I hope people take advantage of that and they reach out to you.
Thanks, Van. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And thanks again for being on the show. And thank you all for listening to The Journey.